Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Weird, and it's one of those things where I feel like someone told Vince about Antifa, and now he's like, oh, we got to put it on TV. This is exactly what Antifa would do. They hate me. I was like, okay, man. This is wild.
I agree. I mean, I'm still processing this. It wasn't subtle. You know, I mean, tipping over the announce table and spray painting and take, I don't know if we saw chainsaws on CNN, but yeah, like just, you know, and the name Retribution. You know, I mean, it's just, I'm really nervous about trusting Vince McMahon and company to do this. And by the way, it's fair game for WWE and pro wrestling to do angles based on current events. I mean, this isn't about, oh, you know, certain things are off that you can't play off of current events and that's always off limits. But this is a dangerous area to tread in. And, you know, I mean, people feel so strongly about what's been going on this summer. And to turn it into a wrestling angle, I mean, Vince McMahon has a history of doing this. We had the Saddam Hussein lookalike, you know, Sheik Adnan, General Adnan. What was his name in WWE? Sheik Adnan El-Kaisi. General Adnan, was it? Is that what they called him, Rich?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was General Adnan and...
And then Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And you know, they did that whole thing. They tried to sell out the LA Coliseum based on, you know, the idea of, you know, fans will pay money to see a fake Saddam's wrestler get beat by All-American Hulk Hogan. And they couldn't sell enough tickets to the whole thing because it felt exploitative and tasteless. And they ran in the smaller venue next door and blamed it on security concerns. And you know, we could talk about a dozen more examples. I mean, this is, it's, I'm nervous, you know, about how I can enjoy seeing Vince McMahon's spin on what's been going on in the world and the announcer commentary and how it's all handled. I mean, Rich, is there a way to make this work? Is there a way where you could watch this and say, wow, you know what? They actually, you know, framed this and executed it in a way where it did not feel as if it was it was taking sides against how most people in a way that would make, I think, the majority of people feel uncomfortable.
I think the easiest way they could have done it is the way they did it a couple of years ago. Both times accidentally, both times coincidentally with Daniel Bryan. One when he had the Yes Movement, when he had the people Occupy Raw, which was the Occupy Wall Street send-off. And then his heel turn when he became Captain WWE and was regaling us with tales of consumerism and fickle people deciding to stand against him when he's been the same person the whole time. And those are right there, right for the taking. And you could have played Daniel Bryan as himself, but they saw that as something funny and to be evil. Same thing with this. I up until now, I never thought someone saying I'm against fascism could be portrayed as a negative or a pejorative, but here we are. And so in pro wrestling, much like with when I was in grad school, the 7/7 bombings and how they had the terror cell that was with Muhammad Hassan and how they had to run it because we taped it and we can never edit stuff we tape. there's just this hollowness when they try to handle big issues like next week or this coming week on the deep dive, I'm talking about Mustafa Ali's basically frustration that he's been allowed to talk about on TV about not getting that shot. And my fear is if they gave him the shot, they would do Black Lives Matter through the prism of him as a police officer and not understanding why they won't comply.
There's just so much with WWE in this hot button issue that comes across as, okay, there's this stuff going on in the world. Let's find a way to create a buzz because ratings are down. And if they did this when things are going well, I'd be like, well, maybe they'll, I might be naive or something like that, but maybe they'll handle this with some sophistication and maturity. But when they're struggling in the ratings, and they're sort of, I don't know if desperation is a word, but certainly concerned, and clearly this week looking to hotshot, I don't trust that they're not going to relish in the controversy they create. And let's keep in mind, Linda McMahon, Vince McMahon's wife, led a pack that is a top fundraiser for Donald Trump. Vince McMahon and Donald Trump have been friends and worked together over the years. And there's, I think people are going to watch this and be concerned that their escape is turning into something that feels like propaganda or exploitation of something that wrestling should just stay away from when it's still hot to the touch and such a serious issue for so many people for good reason. That's just been amplified this summer with what we've seen live on television through official channels and through social media with handheld cameras. I'm sitting here looking at how over the top this was in playing off of what's going on in the streets of the United States and really the world this summer. I'm still a little bit stunned that they're going there.
Yeah, and if I'm looking at a replay of the last few seconds as they had the chainsaw and they're cutting the ropes, the last image we see, this is sponsored by Progressive. Do you think Progressive Insurance wants to be associated with this?
Wow, that's a great point. I mean, it really is. That's the thing. This is the type of thing that WWE can, and Vince has done this before. You get in trouble, you go too far, and then you get the buzz and the controversy and the reaction you want, but then you end up having to pull back because there's some real world issues that kick in. So I don't know. Well, I'm eager to hear what people thought of this. So we're going to pause and introduce the show and give out the phone numbers and email address, and we'll continue the conversation. A lot more happened on the show, too, that I'm eager to talk with Rich about. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It is Friday, August 7th, 2020. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, editor of PWTorch.com and the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, and also host of the Wade Keller Podcast and Post Shows 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. We put up best of shows on the weekends on our red and blue Wade Keller feed, so check those out too. Also, I host a number of VIP exclusive podcasts throughout the week, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline and post pay-per-view roundtables just for VIP members. We'll talk more about VIP later. My co-host is Rich Van from the PW Torch East Coast Cast VIP show and also the PW Torch Daily Cast Saturday night show, The Deep Dive. Rich, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Wade, thank you for having me here. I look forward to talking with the callers, and hopefully they can explain some of the stuff that maybe I just didn't understand tonight.
Yeah, well, actually, instead of waiting till later, let's plug some social media, too, right away, and then we'll get the calls. You can follow me on Twitter, at TheWadeKeller. You can follow our brand on Twitter, at PWTorch. Rich, how can people follow you?
On Twitter, you can follow me at Rich_Fan, F-A-N-N. And that typically has my feelings on life at the moment, updates for my show, updates for things we're talking about on the East Coast Cast, books Travis and I are reading. And as always, you can follow the East Coast Cast on at PW Torch East Coast Cast on Facebook, at East Coast Cast on Twitter. And of course, you can follow PW Torch Daily Cast updates on either the PW Torch main site or a PW Torch VIP site or PW Torch Daily Cast. Or I'm sorry, it might be PW Torch Livecast still on Twitter. But yeah, anytime you check those, anytime I have a new episode, they get updated. I try to have as many guests as possible, put their ads in as well, so that way we can get them mentioned, and that's how you can do it. Look forward to chatting with you all.
I want to take issue with one word you used in your plug, Rich. Uh-oh. Do you know what that's going to be?
Which word?
Reading. You said reading. You and Travis talk about books you're reading. Is Travis reading books?
Yeah. Okay, to be fair, Travis listens to books, but I read them.
Exactly.
And he's very annoyed.
Oh, go ahead. Finish what?
Oh, no, he's very annoyed because sometimes the book series we may be talking about together may not have the audiobook. And from grad school, I've learned how to speed read. So I can read a book. If it's under 700-800 pages, I can read it in about a day and a half if I'm really into it.
Nice.
And for him, he can listen in about 3 days to that same book, where I might take longer because I'm cleaning around the house, I got to work from home, dealing with my son. And so he'll feel like there's the advantage. Travis, if he's listening, it's almost like Around the World in 80 Days. So if I'm reading it, I can get to the end and I'm kind of waiting there. And he jokes when we talk about comic books on East Coast Cast, he doesn't like the idea of ink staining his dainty hands as he has to deal with the plebs. For a gentleman who's so socially aware and conscious, he gets so elitist when it comes to the idea of reading books and comic books and having the audacity to, you know, enjoy that as a hobby.
Yes, I just, that struck me when you said books that we're reading. It's like, no, it's books that I'm reading and Travis is listening to. And it's not that it doesn't count. I mean, you're getting the information, you know, through your ears, through your eyes, you're still getting it. But I will still, and Audible is a sponsor of ours, and I have like 100 Audible books on my phone, but I still value actually reading books too sometimes. And so I like giving Travis a hard time about that.
We all like giving Travis a hard time about life. So that's, yeah, that's fair game.
Yeah. Our phone over here, we'd love to hear from you if you're listening to us live. We'd love to get points of view on not just the do we call it the Antifa attack? Do we call it the – like what is the – what do you think? I don't know. What nickname would Vince like us to give this angle, and which one would he not want us to give it? I guess we can take some suggestions on that. But the retribution invasion of SmackDown. I would love to hear from you guys. Give us a call 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad so you get flagged on our switchboard as wanting to be on the show. Otherwise, we'll let you just sit back and listen. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's hear from some first-time callers tonight, and of course we'll hear from some regulars too. Rich, let's get to the phone calls, and I still want to talk about a lot else on this show. A decent amount of news, including a lot happening with Braun and Bray, and a kind of a four-way setup with Jeff Hardy and Sheamus and Corbin and Shorty G. And, on and on. So Mandy Rose's new soccer mom haircut, too. I mean, all kinds of things. We can just keep a lot of topics. All right, we'll start with area code 314 and then on deck 336. 314, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Jason, VIP member from St. Louis, Missouri. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Jason. Good to hear from you.
Excellent.
Yeah. So what stood out from SmackDown you want to talk about?
First off, I want to say it's finally nice to talk to Rich. I've messaged him on Twitter a couple times, but to talk to him in real time is awesome.
Hey, it's a pleasure. And as I said on Twitter today, I think a lot of people have to accept the fact that, you know, I'm always honored to be on with Wade and Bruce and Todd and everyone else. But that started with folks actually listening and complimenting and saying, hey, this guy isn't crazy. Maybe keep him on. So I really appreciate that positive feedback, and I appreciate your energy and chatting with me online, because I enjoy that.
Oh,
Rich,
always,
I just like to correct you again. Now I'm hearing feedback in my headset. Let me see who that's happening. If I mute Jason, does that stop? Oh, it does. All right, so Jason, I don't know what was going on. I think, I don't know, maybe it's not Jason's fault. Let's see here. Hold on, I think I found the source of my headset problem here, and then I'll give Rich a hard time once I get this solved. Cool.
This is why you're the editor-in-chief. You have the right to edit as you like.
Yes, we'll edit this out. Or maybe not. Who knows? We'll see. Rich, I do want to say that before the first time you co-hosted, all I heard is that you were crazy. So,
well, I was with Travis and then Bruce. So, I mean, I was kind of – or as I mentioned on Twitter, the first time I did a show with you was technically not a show with you. It was because Bruce's power went out in North Carolina. And I did not know, as editor-in-chief, you had the ability to listen in and just pop in as the voice from beyond.
Oh, that was funny. Yes. Yeah.
That was very unnerving. was like, yeah. Oh, wow. Wade could just be sitting at any time being the man in the chair, just waiting to, hey, actually, you guys missed that point. Let me just come on through, mark this for edit.
I did a run-in. Yes. All right, Jason, I'm sorry I had a little technical issue there. Go ahead. We brought you back on. I think everything's fixed. You can pick up now where you left off.
No worries. So, once again, thanks, Chris. I got 2 points that I want to pick up. You know, I heard you guys talk about the run-in and the Antifa movement. That's your opinion. I'll listen to your opinion. To me, this was Nexus with Matt. And, yes, it could be correlated to what's going on in America now, but this is my escape, and I don't correlate this to that. Go ahead.
Jason, let me ask, do you think that this would have happened if the world events the last couple of months were not happening? Do you think that this would have happened anyway, just the way we saw it?
I do. I really do. I think, you know, because ratings are sagging, you know, they need something to spark a hook to see who's in the group. You know, I've seen screenshots of who's this guy. I've never seen the chainsaw before. That was amazing. But, yeah, I do think, you know, wrestling's cyclical, and every now and again you need a group to disrupt Nexus, NWO, the Horsemen. You need that. And, yeah, I could totally see the correlation to Antifa. But I really think this is just a group that wants to cause a disturbance within the force of wrestling.
Rich, go ahead and respond to that. And also, I mean, I know we said it resembled Antifa, although Antifa has sort of become a distorted buzzword in certain corners of the media. And I wonder if we're not playing into it a little bit with our sarcastic references to it. Maybe we want to clear that up, too.
Yeah, it's the interpretation of what has been purported to be anti-fascist organizations, not necessarily actual anti-fascist organizations, because to me, I see what you're saying, Jason. The reason I think it's that way is because any time in the history of the WWE, they have painted a group with a broad stroke. For instance, one of the easiest ones that come to mind now is how so many black wrestlers mentioned the Nation of Domination when they were growing up, to them were faces, because they weren't lying when they talked about the state of black Americans in the United States, but they were purported to be heels. And one of the most favorite in Twitter, and since you follow me, and you may have seen this be the case, is when the Nation is coming to the ring and they put their fist up, and the one young white gentleman who I need to meet at some point, if I can meet him, just like I met the Still Real to Me dude, just like I met the young African-American man who cheered Ron Simmons's title victory, that will complete my wrestling gift fandom collection. And I want to meet that kid who put his fist in the air with the large oversized glasses and like put his head down. And so those are always indicators to me. Wade mentioned the one with Adnan and the Saudis and all that fun stuff that they didn't necessarily, Iraqis really, but yeah, the Saudis, I apologize. Yeah. Words matter. And so those things always tip me off that they keep track of current events, and they don't necessarily lean into them as detail-laden as they should have. But I totally see what you're saying as far as Nexus. The only difference I would say is, in the case of Nexus and in the case of this one, I don't know if they're ever going to show their faces, which, as an aside, I find it ironic that after they finally get to wear masks, they have an entire faction of people who have the ski masks that eliminate the whole bloody purpose of wearing masks in the current in pandemic. Yes. But that is an argument for another day for me.
Yes. I'm thinking of analogies, but I won't bring them up. So anyway, Jason, back to you. Anything else you want to add, or a different topic even?
Yeah, and Wade, that's why I love your show. You know, Rich is a African American that has a viewpoint. I'm a white gay American that have a viewpoint, and we can come on your show and have a conversation and talk about our different views and agree on the disagreement. You know, that's why I love your show. Two quick things. One, or maybe three. One, I think the faction tonight had issues with your headsets, what caused the problem. And two, I know.
I was a little worried. I've been looking out my window. Like, is that a squirrel, or is that some mascot with a lead pipe?
Actually, I have two more. Two, I know we all hate these screwy finishes, but tonight it worked. You know, the run-in by Chad Gable to cause the disqualification, the backstage with Sheamus and Corbin, and then the run-in by Riddle to cause the disqualification. I think that was how you book the run-in and the disqualification. And my third point is, Wade, do you have, like, somewhere on the VIP Torch section of the community of people? Like, I think Sean from Murfreesboro has a lot of great commentary. Is there any way that we could come together in either a chat room or Twitter or whatever and just share viewpoints? And I'll turn it back to you guys.
Sure, yeah. I mean, as far as the social media thing, I guess that's a good point. And probably the best way to do that would be hashtag WKPWP on Twitter. And if you hashtag that and you put yourself out there as, hey, any other listeners, hashtag, and then we can follow each other, that might be the way to get it started. Rich, do you have any other ideas?
I was trying to remember. I could have sworn the message board was up, but it might have gone back down, or it might have been a couple of years ago. Because sometimes I get lost on things. One other thing I would say is, and that's maybe a long-term type Torch deal, we might want to make a Discord server, which are really popular with subscription-based groups where like-minded fans can chat and in an environment like that and have a good debate. I know I'm a member of a soccer Patreon for Arsenal Football Club, and we have a Discord where we can talk about transfers and news and, just like any other message board environment, you're going to have the people that fly off the handle and everything. You're going to have the people that kind of want to just be there for chatting. I think, especially if you're VIP, that's a great environment. But I think in terms of Twitter, doing the hashtag is an easier way to find, especially a conversation thread from one of your shows or one of our shows. So I think that's a great way as well.
Yeah, we'll put some thought into that and see if we can come up with something. Jason, I've already forgotten your point before connecting with other callers and listeners.
The
run-in. No, it came back to me.
The
run-in's working and it's kind of symbiotic. Yeah, you know what? I think so too. I mean, you can absolutely watch SmackDown and be justified in a cynical reaction to everything. And, you know, oh, they're recycling everybody. It's the same people every week and it's all run-ins. That said, there are degrees of cliched escape hatch, cowardly finishes. And then there's ones that sort of make sense for the story you're telling. And I thought tonight it was an example of, if they didn't overdo it all the time, this would have been a week when it really made storyline sense to do it. Matt Riddle didn't stand on the stage and distract somebody. He ran into the ring and leaped off the top rope, springboarded off the top rope, and created a very how could you not be distracted by that? And Corbin was rightfully distracted. Sheamus hit a bro kick, and it felt like, retribution. And then Sheamus messing with Corbin after Corbin's hired hand, Chad Gable, I've been scolded into saying, cost him a match earlier. I thought that against Riddle. Everybody's action felt like how they would act based on being wronged because they wanted to win a match and that opportunity was taken away from them. So this was one of those weeks where I actually thought that, Jason, you and I are thinking the same thing. I was watching this going, I bet a bunch of people are just going to kind of need, I don't want to frame it too harshly, but just need your complaint. Oh, it's just more run-ins. But to me, I look at this as an example of why you want to save your run-ins for when it makes sense. This was one of those weeks when it really did, and I thought it weaved a storyline throughout the show in a way that where there was just kind of this continuum of people reacting, I think, naturally to the circumstances from earlier in the show. Rich, what did you think watching it? Were you one of those knee-jerk criticizers that I'm castigating here?
No, I thought I was a little confused by the first run-in, but then by the end of the night, it made sense to me.
Yeah.
If anything, the only I didn't think the run-in lack sense. And we'll get to it at some point. The only segment of this show outside of the stuff at the end with the run-in in terms of the group retribution and kind of not knowing what their deal is yet. I am completely befuddled by what happened with Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman.
We'll definitely get into that. There's things I like, things I don't like, and things that are questions that aren't answered yet that could sway me to feel strongly one way or the other. And we'll get into that. Jason, anything else you want to add to any of the topics you brought up?
No, Wade and Rich, thanks so much, guys. Living in St. Louis, I wish there was baseball, but those damn Cardinals tested positive again. And like John Morrison, I'm truly the only underground. So thanks so much, guys. You guys have a good weekend.
Great to hear from you. Thank you.
You too.
All right, let's go to another call, and if we don't get to it in that call, we'll get to Fiend and Braun after that. Our number, by the way, if you want to join us, 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558, and push 1 on your keypad to join the conversation. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I just hit refresh, and yeah, we're light on emails, so sometimes we get a lot of emails on the same topic, and I don't read all of them, but this is a good week if you're listening to us to send one in if you want to get on the show. All right, so let's, as I noted earlier, go to 336 next. 336, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Kevin from North Carolina.
Hey, Kevin, good to hear from you. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
Well, it seemed a better show than it has been, in my opinion. I really liked the tease with Alexa, and I like the fact that Braun seems to be going away from the boring big man monster babyface. And when he said that he didn't give a crap about Alexa, and then it just, with the whole her going to touch his mask or caress his face or whatever she was going to do, that got me excited, because that's what I've been hoping for with it. I don't know where it goes, if it's just a tease and then it's going to fizzle out. You know how WWE booking can end up being.
Rich, you want to comment on that?
Sure, and that's where my confusion came from. Because if they go and they spent the time to highlight Team Little Big and highlight all the relationship that Braun's had with Alexa to this point, making her a way that the Fiend can get to the hero. Obviously, he's this impenetrable monster among men, but he has this weak spot. And now, like any 80s cop movie, you have the hostage situation. And he's like, go ahead, you know, do it. I don't care about her. I'm a monster. It kind of makes him lesser, because he's supposed to be, and part of it's the fact that he's the champion. But if he's your champion and he's supposed to be this force in nature, why are you putting Alexa in as this unnecessary hostage if there is no stakes for her now? If anything, I feel like an idiot for thinking Alexa, you know, meant something.
What if, and I don't hope I'm not overthinking this. I know you're the one who usually apologizes for that, Rich. But I wonder if he said, I don't care about her, because he wants to take leverage away from Braun, thinking that she's leverage that he can use. And if there's sort of would that be reverse psychology or sleight of hand, just kind of going, you know, I don't care about her. I care about, you know, getting back at you and destroying you. If that's his way of saying, don't even think of torturing her, because it won't affect me. Again, I don't know that WWE would go that far, and I'm not sure that it would be worth, if that's what they're doing, how people are feeling. And I think your reaction is the majority reaction. Wait a second. I'm supposed to root for Braun against the Fiend, who gave a mandible claw to Alexa Bliss last week. And now Braun is saying he doesn't care that that happened, and he doesn't care about her, even though the most endearing quality and the longest running storyline with Braun, other than his association with Bray, is his association with Alexa. So if they have something in mind and they can have this make sense, either because Braun is trying to, you know, lower, get Bray to lower his guard when it comes to thinking that Alexa is leverage against Braun to protect her. If they can tell that story and tell it well, okay. If there's another thing they're doing, that's fine. Then maybe it's Braun, I don't know, Braun joining Bray. Although I'm trying to, you know, I pause because I'm trying to think through, like, was any kind of hint dropped that could be the direction? And it really seemed like that's the opposite. What we did get, though, is Alexa caressing Fiend's face and Fiend getting some sort of tingly feeling from that that caused him to jump up and turn away that I'm intrigued by. But I'm confused, but again, open-minded to why Braun said he doesn't care about Alexa, because that seems to go so against an obvious and compelling and well-backed storyline that I think we all thought this was going to include. And at this point, it seems like it's either going to take a sharp turn away from that or at least a brief turn away from that. Rich, anything else you want to add on that?
Yeah, I think especially with Alexa caressing his mask, it gave me vibes of Tori and Kane. And
yeah,
how that could go, only the roles were reversed. Like the face is the woman that's trying to keep the heel from being the abuser, which also is a weird vibe too.
Yeah.
And I think if that's what they're gonna do, and ultimately that leans towards Alexa helping Braun retain the title at SummerSlam, great. But how did she get there in the first place between the commercial break? Like there were so many holes in like what led to that point. That by the time we got to the issue of Braun abandoning her, if only for the sake of this week, I was just left confused by it.
Yeah, and again, this comes this is where just building up goodwill with your audience counts for so much. You know, if they have a storyline and it's like really well plotted out, and there's going to be some twists and turns and decoys and deceptions, fine. But you wish that they were better about. Hey, you know, better about consistently having things make sense where we can look back and go, ah, okay, that clue made sense retroactively or in retrospect, but it didn't at the time. And we just don't have a big track record with that. I mean, Braun not being – I've been so bored with Braun. So part of me is just cheering anything that's a break from the character that he's been. And if he's now saying, I'm so wrapped up in the Fiend and this part that's been itching inside of me to break out and now you caused it – to break loose, and he's going to be a different Braun. And what I fear is they're trying to get across that this is going to be a more fierce and intense, you know, killer Braun, and it's going to be a new Braun. And they just threw the line in there. I don't care about Alexa. I just care about killing you. Not really thinking about how much that unraveled what made Braun sympathetic in this situation, especially with the Mandible Claw angle last week. I mean, I might be bored with Braun, but it seemed like the obvious approach to take here is for Braun to be the guy who comes to rescue Alexa, who is put in a compromised position, obviously, and just is feeling terrorized by Bray or by the Fiend. I have less of an issue with how did she get in the ring, because I just feel like we have to have latitude for, you know, the Fiend in some supernatural aspects to how he makes things happen, or we're just going to go completely crazy. You know, you just sort of, I think you have to resign yourself to, in his world, this stuff happens. We don't have to accept it with Matt Hardy and Sheamus, because that's not part of Matt Hardy's realm, and I oppose that.
Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, did I say, what did I say?
Matt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, yeah. Okay.
I was going to say that one would be a, we'd have to just allow for some stuff.
Yeah,
to
totally.
Okay.
But with Jeff, I don't want Jeff in the bar fight with Sheamus. Like, the supernatural thing is like, really, you just can't, you know, keep the supernatural stuff in this corner. And make us think at least, you know, I feel like we struck a deal. We have an understanding. Undertaker, Bray Wyatt, there's certain people who they leave the normal narrative realm and we accept it and it's an unspoken agreement. And then you go and you just, you know, push past curfew with Jeff Hardy. So I don't like that, but I can deal with Alexa sort of appearing there and leave it to my imagination that in the 3.5 minutes, you know, somehow she, you know, ended up there. But anyway. Anything you want to add to that, Rich?
Oh no, I think you did a good job in explaining the Bray effect. Like, listen, I'm fine with Bray being this generation's horror movie guy.
Yeah.
I, in fact, like that part from the end. I thought it was a bad imitation of the very last scene. Spoiler alert of the original Friday the 13th when he came back out and dragged Braun into the water. But with this stuff with Alexa, I'm waiting for her at some point to try to run in the back and like turn an ankle. I just lean all the way in. Like make me just completely just say, okay, you guys win. I'm in.
Yeah. All right. Let me go back to Kevin for either a follow-up or a different topic. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I've got a follow-up on that. What I've been kind of hoping for is that, yeah, he said that he didn't care about Alexa, but he's really just trying to get in the Fiend's head. And I can see it at SummerSlam going down of somehow him thinking he's saving Alexa and then Alexa turning on him and breaking his heart or something like that. There ain't no telling which way they'll go, but I would really like to see Bray and or Alexa, somebody with the Fiend, and I don't really have a whole lot of faith in their long-term storytelling, but that's what I've been wanting to see out of it. But I really like Big E's promo tonight, and he's all his goofiness, the hip gyrating, and it's never been my favorite, but he's really a big, believable guy that I wouldn't want to get anywhere close to if he was mad and fighting. But I like how he talked to Kayla and called her by her name multiple times. And I know they've been doing better about giving the names to the interviewers. But,
yeah.
But it.
Yeah, I think the sometimes I think the Kevin the wrestlers are mentioning the names of the interviewers out of sympathy for the fact that that you know WWE. Vince McMahon and their, you know, directors and producers didn't have the courtesy to actually give names to what was a predominantly female interview crew when they would throw to them for interviews. They didn't give them a graphic on the screen or mention their name. And so wrestlers would say their name either happenstance conversationally or just to let people know, you know, at some point who these, you know, that Sarah Schreiber has a name. They've been intermittently better about it, but too stubborn to just do it regularly and be professionals like every single other sport in the world puts the name of the interviewer on the bottom of the screen before an interview segment. But as far as Big E goes, Rich, what'd you think of Big E discussing his now singles, his burgeoning singles career based on these circumstances and framing it and kind of acknowledging what he's been doing as a character, the log role and, pouring cereal on people and popcorn gifts and all that, but also saying, you know, now it's time to see what happens when I go singles. Did this strike the right chord for you in terms of setting him off in a direction to a semi-main event or main event singles run where we at least believe he's taking it seriously, even if he's still at the core, you know, Big E can't help but be Big E?
I think it did. And because, again, going back to the idea of a long-term narrative, the thing that bothers me with the Big E push now is they're completely forgetting the fact he was Intercontinental Champion like within weeks of being on the main roster. So we've seen him apply himself as a singles competitor and win and get to the second highest level of SmackDown, in fact.
And there's no harm bringing that up. I mean, that doesn't hurt. This
Yeah.
He started as a singles guy with great success, and then he had this wonderful run with New Day, and he wouldn't trade it in for anything, and they were so loyal to each other. They never, you know, I mean, Kofi had his time, but Big E didn't.
Right.
And, you know, someday, you know, people thought, would they break up? Would they go their own direction? Would there be injuries that would cause them? And here we are today with Big E having a chance to pick up where he left off when, as you say, Rich, he had early success as a singles wrestler. This doesn't have to be framed so much as ignoring history. What would happen if Big E didn't have a tag partner? Well, we've seen that plenty, including in NXT with the championship run, by the way. So, yeah.
Yeah, with the championship run that he brought back the old King Kong Bundy five count.
Yes. yep.
I loved that stuff. I mentioned on the East Coast cast, I would watch that back when I first started contributing for the Torch on, I want to say that was Daily Motion or whatever the thing, paid service they did for FCW before NXT proper came into being, and was amazed by him. And one thing I want to note, and I think you both were having some good points with the speech, Big E looks like he's lost weight. It looks like he's slimmed down because he's always been a big muscular man, but it looks like he's a little bit more svelte. And when you see him next to Kayla talking and he's that just yoked up, I guess it was very, he's not an easy
an easy win in any regard. It's not like when, you know, you have to kind of, no offense to him, but when I saw Adam Cole and McAfee on Wednesday, you forget that McAfee was a 6'1 NFL punter that's now out of football and is a bigger guy, and Adam, you know, generously 5'8 and isn't the biggest human on the planet. But when you see Big E, this guy, similar to Jeff Cobb in the background, you know, I have the New Japan USA on my laptop, and, you know, you see a Jeff Cobb, you see a Big E, you see a John Cena. These are humans that, regardless of their height, their girth, is just something you have to, you don't necessarily need to be 6'10". These guys look like they can handle themselves. And so his path to being championship wrestler, I think, is a good start. I just need a good, solid feud where he gets that respect at the end. And you can see he's making that, as you like to mention, that journey start a little bit more and a little bit more realized, as opposed to just, this is my pipe dream. Oh, when or when will it happen?
Would you have rather seen Big E take a sharp 180 and say, hey, when I'm with my New Day partners, we, you know, yuck it up. We have fun. And we, you know, when the bell rings, we do our business. We've won championships. We've been in tough fights. We've won tough fights. We've lost tough fights. We fight together, but we have fun together. As a singles guy, though, I'm going to strip away a lot of the stuff that people look to me for, to lighten the mood and goof off and be the subject of gifts and all that. I want to be world champion. Like, I want to have a great singles run. Like, actually just declare he is going to strip away some of the things that maybe some people, that a lot of people expect out of him, and show a side of himself that is different. And it kind of, you know, just do an expository explanation of it, almost like Matt Hardy did on AEW on Wednesday night, a little more storyline based than Matt, perhaps, because, you know, Big E wouldn't be, I shouldn't say more storyline based, but less meta, because it's not like Big E would be leaving a supernatural character who's completely crazy and just admitting, well, that's just a persona I put on for entertainment. Big E can just, you know, do it more sports based, which is, I'm going to get serious and you're going to see less of me log rolling and making faces and gyrating. I'm on a course, and I'm determined to. I mean, I guess a lot of that depends on how much realistically they're going to do to push him as a singles wrestler, and who they want him to be if they did push him quite far. If he's going to win the IC title and hold it for a month and a half and then lose it, he probably doesn't want to give such a declarative speech, or it'll be a letdown. But nevertheless, as I take all these sidebars, Rich, back to you on, would you have rather have seen Big E really strip away the comedic stuff and go serious, or do you like kind of the hybrid version we saw tonight where both kind of coexist?
I like the hybrid version, and the reason I do is because Big E reminds me a lot. I keep going back to him. Lance Storm mentioned it on Twitter, and he said it a couple of weeks ago. He reminds me a lot of late-stage John Cena, where Cena started doing the interviews and opening up a little bit more about himself and talking about how, you know, growing up in a family full of boys, we were pretty raunchy. And that made me learn as an adult, I had to button things up outside of home life, because I never wanted it to get as wild publicly as it did in our house, where my mom was going crazy. And I think Big E this morning before SmackDown, Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, amongst others, released an album or released a single, and the music video came out, and you had a person in, I want to say Congress, that said, I accidentally saw this raunchy video and America is doomed because these women are doing things inappropriate, and they're shaking their bottoms and they're doing these inappropriate things. And Big E had a conversation with the gentleman he did the podcast with a few weeks ago about police violence and being black in America. And he's like, you know, this is when I was younger and I went to a website I wasn't supposed to. And I would tell my parents, I don't know how we got to this site. I was searching for something and a pop-up came and took me to this exact place. And he's very like, there are so many people, I was reading the comments. There are so many people like, yeah, that happened to me too. I don't know what happened, but I thought I was going to whitehouse.gov and it went to .com and things. And he just started this avalanche of people telling on themselves and their adolescent missteps on the internet. And that was very, to me, I was like, this is a very, like, that seems not wholesome, but it's a very down-to-earth relatable moment, especially in this era of social media and technology where that stuff has happened. And so you take him on SmackDown and he has this real conversation with Kayla. And you see it, and again, to me, I'm like, okay, this guy can do it. But my question is always going to be, is that how they interpret their champion? And I don't think Vince McMahon would see that as something that's amiable or affable in some ways. They want them to be like the man's man. And I don't think Big E's ever wanted to be the version of Big E they want him to be, which is basically next generation Mark Henry. And that's okay. Now, my question is going to be, are they going to let him be himself and be a champion? We've seen it with Daniel Bryan. They've let it happen before. It's going to either be desperation or the fans, which sadly, because of the pandemic, we haven't been able to see or hear verbally, getting behind him.
All right, very good. Let's appreciate the call, Kevin. I want to go to another call here, and we'll bring in Javier from 305 here in Miami. Javier, I don't know. Welcome to the show.
Actually, this is Jorge from Miami.
Oh, my gosh. That figures. No, you're kidding, aren't you?
No, this is actually his brother.
You know, I can tell. Your voice is different.
Ah!
You completely messed me up. All right, so let's go next to let's go to our next caller, 305. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, that really was my brother. Wait.
I know. You just totally threw me off. See, I try to just, you know, get ahead of things, and then you guys just throw that at me.
Well, you finally managed to talk me into the show.
Well, good. Good to hear your voice. I don't know why has it been such a struggle?
Mostly because I have a 6-year-old kid, and usually it's kind of hard to, you know, coordinate my schedule with my brother. So this was one of the rare times that my wife was working overnight. So we managed to end up watching the show together.
Cool. Well, welcome to the show, Jorge. So what do you think of SmackDown tonight?
The ending was interesting. I think one of the things that we're just talking about is that we're just trying to figure out exactly who the Retribution was. My brother actually had a pretty good theory on that one.
My thoughts was that it might have been the Skulk from Evolve and the Retribution because they want to get revenge on the WWE for buying Evolve.
Rich, what do you think of the theory?
I think that's better than some random folks just put together. Now, yeah. I think – okay, now here's the thing. I think Javier is 100% right in that it's a Skulk because the dude who kept screaming into the camera, I will swear in a stack of Bibles, was Leon Ruff. And that would make a lot of sense. The only question I would have is, are they going to I don't know how to say this, but are they going to talk about the fact that their neo-capitalist ways are what led to the dissolution of independent wrestling vis-a-vis the entire North American landscape? Like, that is a lot to break down and do in a pro wrestling environment. Or are they just going to say, hey, you guys, Vince McMahon was just too powerful and poor Gabe Sapolsky and Mr. Hamdoui just couldn't do it anymore and – we speak for the people who have been bought out by Vince McMahon. That I see what you're saying, Javi, but the only thing I would push back on if they did that and if they are doing that, you're tacitly admitting the most of the denizens of your PC are people you've raided from other companies and put out of business. And that's kind of a you're telling on yourself moment. I don't know if they're capable of navigating without looking like a-holes, to be honest.
I'll throw in two. If you're going to build a storyline that is cross-brand between Raw and SmackDown, leads to chaos, the ropes being snapped, spray paint, all this destruction, and it's to have some wrestlers who are going to be perceived by the mainstream fans as working for the minor league group that's underneath NXT's developmental level from a brand that they barely or never heard of, I mean – I just don't see Vince McMahon greenlighting it. I mean, it could turn out really compelling, but the idea that they're going to do this massive angle that is going to create a buzz all weekend and all that, and the payoff is it's five people unmasking who nobody, you know, the vast, I don't say nobody, obviously not nobody, but the vast, 98% of people watching are going to have no recognition factor for. And then when they start talking about Evolve, if they do start talking about Evolve and buying them out, they're going to be like, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, to me, that feels – it just doesn't feel like – I could see them doing it on NXT. I still don't see Vince greenlighting that for Raw and SmackDown. I'm not saying that's not what it is because it works as well as anything. And there's some, you know, indications just, you know, looking at things, maybe that is it. But, wow, I mean, Javier, do you actually think Vince – would be like, yeah, that's something that I think would resonate with the millions and millions who watch SmackDown, or almost millions and millions.
Well, it's going to be WWE-ified anyway. They're just going to be the minions. Think of it kind of like when Brody Lee showed up as the head of the Dark Order. So you put somebody, you know, that is known as the head, and they're just his minions, you know, and, you know, obviously spin it not to be, you know, the whole, you know, he put them out of business. You know, I mean, you say that, but, you know, not in necessarily those words. But if you have someone, you know, like that they're working for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my brother just said, Sami Zayn, maybe. But I don't think that'll be the one. But something like that, that, you know, someone that – a group that's, that was brought in by somebody else for to do this. From maybe a wrestler that we already know, someone who's already in the company, or, you know, someone they might have signed or something.
Rich, do you think they'd need to have a leader who was more known to fans in order for Vince McMahon to greenlight and justify this level of TV time, even if it's WWE-ified, to a group of you know, smaller wrestlers who people haven't heard of prior, talking about an organization that very few have heard of, with some, you know, kind of gripe about the WWE taking him over. Would you need to have somebody be their leader who had more of a Vince McMahon style to their name value and just recognition factor?
It'd have to be a McMahon, to be honest, because look at what we saw earlier before that on Raw. I'm on SmackDown. I apologize.
Yep.
You had the double champions, the two woman power trip, kowtowing to Stephanie McMahon. Just cowering to her. And so if you have those two, and they are, to us, the most powerful women in the WWE right now, what this Splinter Cell needs is either – it's not going to be Shane because he's got Underground going on Monday, and, you know, there's only so many things he can do between importing Underground Fight Ring into his father's wrestling promotion. And Triple H is currently booking a match between an ex-NFL player and one of his top talents on NXT, so – it's either going to be Linda or Vince. That's the only people that make sense to me that have the gravitas. Because
Paul Heyman. How old are Shane's?
Oh, my God. I think they're like 13, 14. They're going to have like the mini Mean Street Posse.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. You're on the right track. Wait, it could be a combination of both Stephanie and Shane's kid.
Oh,
it could
man.
Be like the Little Rascals, Little McMahons, and then now
mean,
taking
not-
over.
You know Vince is going to want his grandkids on TV sometime as soon as he can, you know, or Hunter and Shane or Stephanie are going to push for it. I mean, there'll be people pushing pulling back against it too. But can you pull back against something?
Well, remember the comment that he made a couple of years ago that started the dark road that ultimately led me to realizing you were right and Shane is kind of suspect. When he said he deserved to be the heir because he had three boys. And that was kind of like a record scratch. And
yep.
Stephanie, Stephanie's usually pretty good at hiding it, but the stain she showed when she reacted to that was pretty wild. So, yeah, so, and they've been very careful about, I'm talking about they, again, pronouns, pal. Stephanie and Triple H have been very careful about not having their daughters on television, whereas Shane's done everything but he had his kids come out as mini Shanes for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So I think those boys are more likely to be on screen than their girls.
If Paul Heyman shows up and leads the group and his, you know, demotion as director of Raw was all a work, or it wasn't a work, but, you know, they still, you know, the press release said he's still going to be utilized as an on-air talent. I mean, I don't see that happening because Paul going from Brock Lesnar to this Retribution group. I mean, I mean, Paul would do what he was told to do if Vince insisted, I suppose. But I don't see that as a particularly good fit. So I'm hoping we get to see a good payoff here. I mean, one way or the other, whether it's it's big names or recognizable names or one name representing a bunch of upcoming stars or whatever. I mean, I'm, you know, just in a broad, general, generic sense, based on the time and push this is getting, I hope it turns out to be interesting and adds to the programming. Javier or Jorge, back to you.
Yeah, no. The other thing I wanted to bring up is that this episode actually ended up having a lot of good promos and a lot of bad promos. The good promos in particular was Sonya Deville. She was pretty impressive in hers. And the other one that I liked a lot was Otis being serious. The only problem with Otis is that I felt it was undercut a little bit with it, because he was talking about being serious and then he continued doing his comedy shtick, you know, in his match, which I think undercut it a little bit. But, you know, I just didn't like the way that he continued on with that match.
Rich, what'd you think of Otis behind the scenes, or I guess not behind, but the backstage interview? And even Kayla, you know, selling it to Miz and Morrison, you know, no, he sounds more serious. And then what actually then played out in the match?
Well, I thought that was really cool. I thought Otis is, again, the longer he has that Money in the Bank, the more likely it is, I think, when he cashes it in, he'll actually win it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have something either not necessarily big for him, but big in that he'll be the transition to something else they want to do. And I look at Mandy. She's already leaned into that mom haircut, by the way.
Twitter.
She put up on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, hashtag hottest soccer mom you know or something like that. And I was like, well, ma'am, I'm not going to argue that point. I'm not dealing with that one. I'm going to take that one. And
how is there
right.
not – How is there not a wrestler yet named Karen who's playing off of the whole Karen thing?
Karen Jarrett.
See, Vicky could have changed her name to. Yeah, I guess that. Yeah, she might have been the original Karen.
She would have. She is the, like, that's the first person I thought of. And Jeff's there. Jeff, I mean, I thought when you were mentioning a name, Jeff could be the leader of this faction, or Karen could be the leader of this faction.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
There we go.
Lot.
Now we're talking.
That'd be a lot. Yeah, because I saw independent wrestler AJ Gray had put on Twitter, and I couldn't stop laughing. And now this makes me think of it. If you think about those dark days of Impact, a dude would get the title, and you'd get a smooth 4 weeks to get over before you hear the wee-oo, and Jeff Jarrett would beat you for the title. Like, that was just basically the circle of life in Impact at the time.
Yes.
And so I would love that siren to hit, and it's Karen Jarrett saying that this is her, folks, and it's retribution for years of ignoring her husband. And
oh,
as we wonder how does that relate to anything, you just have to go with it and just fine. Just let her go. She's carrying in full throttle. But I think facetiousness aside, going back to the original point, I think they're doing a good job. The one thing I never like is you have Morrison, who his matches never look like fights, but he's built and he looks like $1 million. You have the Miz, who, as many call the King of Safe Style, again, looks like $1 million. Otis looks like he's a trucker. Tucker looks like he's a trucker. And they fight. I don't see that being something you need to denigrate if they're people you want to make money with. It's like very hollow. They've devolved. I mean, we talked about evolve, so now I'm going to talk about the evolution. Miz and Morrison are now back to their preteen doing their promo show, the dirt sheet, and it's just, you guys are better than this. I've seen Morrison give great promos. I've seen The Miz give excited promos, and now it's just like, well, this is what we see you guys as. Go do it.
The goal is to say our humor is so sophisticated it goes over your head, and good comedy sometimes offends it was kind of laugh. Yeah. I was a little laugh out loud the way that they tried. I mean, I don't know if it's self-awareness or defensiveness. I'm still not quite sure, Rich.
Oh, I think it's both. I think it's that, it's that stand-up comedian that hops on Twitter after they say an offensive joke and people call them out and they're like, well, you just don't get comedy anymore. Back in my day, you know, we could say what we wanted and denigrate any weak, unprotected class and get a joke. And now I got to actually be funny. How dare you?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Jorge or Javier.
Yeah, no, that I was saying that for some reason, Miz and Morrison now sound like they do nothing but bad, boring dad jokes. The note that I made was that Morrison looks like the dude that peaked in high school and missed the memo. Miz is Han Solo in Force Awakens, the deadbeat dad that left his family to hang out with his best friend.
Yep.
I had myself on mute because I was coughing, but I gasped. I felt that one. It's like, I felt like if you said that to the Miz, he would just like look down and just like, you didn't have to go that hard, man.
So what else have you guys got?
What were your thoughts on the battle royal for the number one contender for Bayley's title?
Well, I think battle royals are a stupid way to find out who can win a one-on-one match, but I make an exception once a year for the Royal Rumble and don't complain because it's so successful. But I mean, it's what I'd expect out of Stephanie. I don't know. Where, Rich, what do you think?
I use the old tried and true. There was an attempt, and that's basically where I was with it. I mean, I guess the fact that it's a triple brand battle royal, my question is, why would that need to be the case? And also, again, Wade, Javier, Forty, Jorge, I need to ask the three of you this question. If these women are the two-woman power trip and they have every title in NXT, I'm sorry, in WWE, why would you need the third brand? Because you're not counting somehow now that Charlotte doesn't have the NXT title. And I enjoyed the NXT European UK champion saying, well, at least I can't leave the country and I'm safe. Why would this need to be a three-brand battle royal if NXT isn't really going to be in their equation as far as something someone would want to attain?
It's so weird how NXT is, like, you know, half the time or less referenced and half the time or more ignored. You know, oh, Matt Riddle, he came out of nowhere. It's like, well, you know, I mean, he sort of had a run in NXT. You know, Big E trying to have single success. Well, he was sort of really successful really early on. And like, they just pick and choose when they reference it and when they don't, when it's one of the three brands and when it's that third brand that isn't quite in the Raw SmackDown ecosystem and it's got not a firewall, but, you know, a climbable wall, but there is a barricade between it and the Vince McMahon run stuff. And so, you know, it's always a little nerve-wracking when the carefully curated and protected and just carefully booked women's division in NXT has either an invader like Charlotte who wins and then leaves without giving back, but hey, she gave a rub, or they leave and then they're in the booking hands of Vince McMahon. And, you know, we saw what happened with Gargano and Ciampa and, you know, other NXT visits when it was meant to, you know, pop a rating, and it just screwed up ongoing storylines. So I'm worried in that respect that protecting the NXT personas won't be a priority. So that's bad. It could also, though, you know, lead to an NXT woman getting a shot at SummerSlam at the SmackDown title. And, you know, so, I mean, there's so many possibilities. I haven't even, you know, churned through them yet. What do you think?
My thoughts are
I thought it
more
would
or less
be. Oh, go ahead, Jen. I apologize.
My thoughts were basically what you were saying, Wade, is that the only reason would be if they're planning on maybe having an NXT wrestler challenge for SummerSlam. My best guess, maybe Rhea Ripley.
It seems like the story they're telling is different than that, though. I haven't fully figured out the story with Ripley, but I feel like with Ripley, it's you know, forced detours and hardships and setbacks as part of a long story arc. And if she just were to get a top, I guess you could still tell that story. She could have another setback at SummerSlam, but I don't know. What do you think, Rich, of that?
I think if they're going to do that with Rhea, that's too many pay-per-views where you've had her learning to win by losing.
Yeah.
And at some point she needs her gimmick, as Cam funnily mentioned on Twitter, to her amusement. She's the 5'8 woman that is the most 6'5 woman you've ever met. And it makes sense because he really is. She has the moveset and she is larger than life.
Yep.
If you see her in a match, you think she's the intimidator, and it doesn't matter who she's against. And so I think if you have her constantly losing where she's getting these opportunities and failing, same thing with Io Shirai. I would not want her as NXT champion going up against one of the two other champions, because if you're not going to have a program where she's coming quote unquote up
or is going to be able to float like they did when they had the title, you're already markedly showing her to have a lesser title. And so I would say if you're going to do it with someone like Captain Coda, or if you're going to do it with someone in the Robert Stone brand. But again, you already have Shayna Baszler. Why would you bring up Mercedes Martinez for a one-off? Why would you bring up I got to find her regular name. I usually call her racist McTweetface. Aaliyah. Why would you bring Aaliyah up? That wouldn't serve anything. So, yeah, I think it has to be either a person returning, maybe like a Mickie James if she's healthy. That would be a good one-off against one of them, because that goes back to the storyline of, you know, Mickie is a Trish Stratus compatriot that can add to the story. Sasha wants Trish Stratus, or is ducking Trish Stratus, and her buddy Bailey can take out one of her buddies. Something like that.
Are we overthinking it and Nikki's going to win and just get her?
Yeah.
Because it's SummerSlam. I don't see that. If this was just, you know, Battle Royal for a shot at, you know, Backlash or whatever, you know, that's one thing. But at SummerSlam, I don't see them putting even Ripley in the Ripley would be like the one person who they could, who has enough name value instantly to the Fox audience, perhaps. But to me, I just think they keep it in-house, and, you know, they either decide to push somebody, you know, it's Lacey Evans wins or something, but she just turned heel. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. So to me, it just seems like it's most likely just going to be Nikki, and it's the way to justify her getting a shot despite losing her last shot.
Beth Phoenix, maybe?
I guess, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to just throw everybody in there, then that would be SummerSlam worthy to have somebody like her, you know, win a Battle Royal. Sure, yeah. Yeah. I want to turn the page and get your guys' thoughts on, one or both of you. I want to get one or both of your thoughts on the Braun Strowman, Fiend, Alexa Bliss situation. Javier, you've been good at explaining your take on a lot of aspects that might fly under the radar or symbolic or clue dropping or whatever with the Fiend and the Firefly Funhouse. What's your interpretation of what we saw tonight?
My brother just laughed at that. I think I'm
brotherly
I'm,
love.
I'm kind of where you were. I think you have to wait and see, because it's either Braun Strowman is either become an actual monster, and you might end up almost with I don't want to say like a double turn, because the way that the character the Fiend is, he's not never really going to truly be a face, but kind of in the face position against a monstrous Braun Strowman. That's one way. And then, you know, and he legitimately doesn't care, or, you know, he's just throwing him off the scent so that he wouldn't hurt Bliss. Those are the two possible ways, but until they develop the story more, don't know. And then there's also the question of whether his reaction to being shown like some sort of affection by Alexa Bliss to the Fiend, that maybe be a chink in his armor, that he never had affection. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to think, but I was curious on it. Did you like what they did with Fiend and Braun and Alexa tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I mean, it definitely seemed like part one of the next set of the story. So if this is a part of a trilogy, this almost seems like the first act of the third part of the trilogy. Is it a possibility that maybe Alexa Bliss is interested in him? It really felt like it was almost like a new beginning, which is kind of weird since this is to set up SummerSlam in terms of the story, because I found it really interesting, the Fiend's reaction. And Bray Wyatt said it's his turn now, meaning the Fiend. So maybe it might just be that, you know, they're going to explore more the actual Fiend, you know, and give the Fiend itself more personality, and, you know, have the, Bray take a little bit more of a back seat and see more of the Fiend kind of develop.
Did this seem like Braun is, that this reduced the odds of Braun joining the Wyatt family, or can you read into Braun saying, you know, there's something inside of me that's wanted to get out, and now you've unleashed it, and there's all this, you know, rage and fury aimed at the Fiend, but that can also lead ultimately to him, you know, becoming a Fiend henchman and being alongside him and Alexa Bliss in some sort of, you know, heel faction. I can't drop all the turns and off ramps and on ramps to get there. But did tonight make you think more, that was more or less of a chance of happening? First to Javier and then Rich.
No, I don't know, because I had heard about a lot of people talking about like a faction between the three. I never really felt that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this is a case of be careful what you wish for. Bray got the monster that he wanted, but it's something he's not going to be able to control. I know Alexa Bliss is going to play a role. I don't know if the role, and she's going to play the role of the damsel who tames the savage beast. The question is whether she's going to, she's going to basically bring Braun Strowman back down to earth, or if she's going to like turn the Fiend babyface, sort of. I don't think so. I think she's more likely going to, you know, bring Braun Strowman away from being the monster and return to being the man.
Rich, any follow-up or thoughts on our conversation earlier and then what we're just talking about here now on that?
Yeah, I think to this point, I'm a little nervous that they're not keeping track of everyone on their roster, because the closer they get to – that's a very broad term, but I think the closer they get to what they're doing right now with Bray and Braun and Alexa, the less special it makes eventually Karrion Kross and Scarlett whenever they make it to Raw or SmackDown. I'm assuming SmackDown. Because that is basically their role. You have this woman who is this she's in that world. Like you mentioned, the world of Bray Wyatt. She's in the world of Karrion Kross, this death, destruction, time's up, etc. And then she's not a hostage. She is a willing participant. So if you turn Alexa into that role, you also eliminate that. You just mentioned Nikki a few moments ago with the Battle Royal. You also eliminate that connection, which they've spent so much time putting into when that was supposed to be, or that seemed to be based on television, a throwaway relationship a few years ago that they now have developed into something that's pretty effective for them. So I think there's a lot of bridges burned for the sake of bringing her into the storyline with very little advantage, and depending on how they play it out. So I'm hoping that this is a ruse to somehow give affection to the Fiend that he had never received before. But then I think of Sister Abigail and how all of this started, because Randy Orton burned down his farm, and Randy was really the person in the wrong in that case. So the more I pull on the sweater, the more pieces of the thread starting to come off. So I don't really know how they can do this or land this plane other than doing one of their specials of just ignore this part.
Yeah.
This part, pay attention to, you're fine.
And I want to give them a chance, you know, whether they deserve it or not, you know, but you can't rule that out either, that people are going to be frustrated who have paid close attention and looked for clues, and they just go, oh, okay, that was the week where they changed their mind or abandoned plans or switched plans, and we just had to sort of disregard or downplay things that otherwise we felt were worth reading into. Anyway, yeah, so Javier or Jorge, anything else, any other topics or any follow-up?
No, none from me.
Yeah, no, it pretty much covered everything that I had in mind.
Sounds good. Good to hear from you guys. I was going to say especially Jorge, but that's not really fair to Javier. Good to hear from both of you for different reasons.
Thanks, much appreciated, and I'll put go VIP.
Thank you. I appreciate the endorsement. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. All right, cool. Rich, let me look at our thin email bag here.
Okay.
David in Pittsburgh said, "Hey, Wade and Rich, up until the last 4 minutes of the show, my wife and I thought the show was okay. Braun, a little meh, but then the ending. So the whatever at the end of SmackDown are supposed to be WWE take on the pro. So the whatever at the end of SmackDown are supposed to be WWE take on the protesters." Am I also supposed to think these protesters can take out all the superstars at ringside? If this wasn't – they're not superstars yet. They're trainees. Come on. Come on. Let's well, as you said, Rich, words count. If this wasn't WWE, I would have faith of a good payoff, but not with this group's history. For us, this isn't a cliffhanger worth coming back for. So Dave kind of echoing my thoughts in certain respects, which is, you know, why would you have faith in a good payoff? But we haven't talked about the idea that these, you know, audience members haven't been repeatedly WWE hasn't explained who they are and what their role is and all of that on a consistent basis. They're just, we're sort of, you know, if they could blur them and if they could like blur them out a little bit, so we, you know, couldn't make out their faces, I think they'd be fine with that, because they're there to make noise and create energy. But the idea that they just, these, you know, five showed up and started just beating up dozens of people at ringside in that way. I mean, you know, it's an aspect of it that was they had to overcome that challenge somehow. Do you think they did a very good job making it seem believable? I guess because they had the element of surprise and weapons.
I still would have done, again, we just saw this on Wednesday with Karrion Kross, where he told Keith Lee it was his fault and laid out basically the same trainees. So either they got new trainees between now and then, or these folks got to learn some self-defense. I don't know what the issue is. And I don't know. I don't think it's a good idea, Wade, because you also have so many of your wrestlers. You'll have a Shotzi Blackheart in the crowd. You'll have a Simone Johnson in the crowd. And these are people, in those two in particular, whose main value in terms of wrestling acumen and in lineage you would not want associated with getting beat down by this faction we don't necessarily know if they're going to be behind. Because to be quite honest, we've seen this faction before, and it was called Sanity, and they dumped it.
Yeah. All right.
They turned them into jokes. Like, it was the exact same group. Exact same motivation.
Yeah. Let's talk about Matt Riddle and Sheamus for a minute. Because I thought this was really fun. I mean, when Matt Riddle came to SmackDown, Sheamus was one of the matches that I wanted to see. Riddle, tough guy, you know, legit MMA fights to on his resume. Sheamus, like, laying it in unapologetically throughout his career. Mm-hmm. I found it a little rich for Sheamus to be complaining about Riddle getting pushed too hard too fast in the main roster, considering his past, 10 plus years ago. I mean, you know, speaking of ignoring history, come on. But I thought this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the taste of it we got for 12 minutes minus a break. So, you know, 8+ minutes. And I want to see more of it. And I thought that they handled it well. Like, I thought having Riddle go toe-to-toe with Sheamus, given the push that Sheamus has gotten lately, kind of been rehabbed. And the way – and not only that, but then just there was what Riddle and Sheamus did. But then the announcing – I thought, you know, we rip on WWE announcing a lot, but I really liked the commentary here, and that's why I'm not for fast-forwarding through it or tuning it out, because it's such a big part of the storytelling of WWE, the announcing. And they were talking about, you know, Riddle does rub people the wrong way. And, you know, and they talked about him calling people out, big names out on Twitter, and that, you know, Sheamus is kind of standing up, you know, for what he thinks is too hard of a push. And I'm not quite sure what they're doing with Sheamus in this episode, if he's meant to be a tweener. It's hard to go from what he did to Jeff Hardy to thinking they can turn him anytime soon. I mean, come on. But he certainly, anybody standing opposite of Baron Corbin is going to be seen in sympathetic light. And then during the commentary, I'm not saying they were sympathetic to Sheamus's argument, but they laid it out there in a way where they weren't discrediting it, that Matt Riddle did get maybe a privileged fast push, is sort of a chosen one or got to jump ahead in line, and that this is a real test for him. So I don't know. I just found the commentary compelling, and the way that they talked about, you know, if Riddle wants to justify, essentially they just said in so many words, the big push he's getting out of the gate, he's got to win here. And it felt like AEW's approach, where they were really talking about a win or a loss counting. And by doing that, it made Sheamus being upset by the run and even more credible when Shorty G came out and ruined the match, because it took away Sheamus's chance to shut up Matt Riddle and set him back. And it also took something away from Matt Riddle, although Riddle's a, you know, chill guy and he's cool with just about anything. But, you know, it took something away from Riddle too, which put heat on Corbin and also obviously Chad Gable. So your thoughts on that presentation, the commentary, and how they positioned both Riddle and Sheamus here in this opening match.
Yeah, I liked it. And I think to your point about Sheamus's return and reincarnation of Sheamus, I think it's also helped that because of his neck injuries and redoing his body and rethinking his workout regimen, he's lost a lot of that mass. He looks like an attainable opponent now instead of the superhuman when he beat John Cena in that ill-fated tables match where he had the "oh me" look on his face as he stepped through the table and Sheamus won the world title. That Sheamus was a monster. That's 300 pounds of muscle. This guy's, you know, by his own admission on his YouTube channel, he's closer to 230, 240. You know, Vince McMahon's like, you're getting small, pal, when he first saw him after his injury. He's like, well, the guy had a neck injury. What are we doing? So him versus Riddle, I saw that. I loved it. It was akin to Riddle versus Thatcher or any of the other grapple dudes. I love seeing him wrestle and evolve and some of those independent promotions. And Sheamus, like you said, for his snugness and his wanting need to make sure things are laid in, Riddle's a guy who is not going to care about that. And in fact, he's going to lean into it and appreciate it, as he calls it, stallion behavior. And so that match was great. The Shorty G tie-in was great. I really enjoyed the backstage segment with Corbin. And usually Corbin is one of those guys I don't necessarily like as much outside of when I'm talking to him. And I thought by the end of the night, all of the characters had a part to play. Hardy, Sheamus, Shorty G, and Corbin, and what I think is going to be a solid multiple-person feud.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, then the way that Baron Corbin is opposite of Sheamus, and where does that go? And then you've got are they heading towards a triple threat or a four-way match, maybe involving either Chad Gable or Jeff Hardy as a fourth member if Matt Riddle, Sheamus, and Corbin are in the mix? Like, I'm just trying to figure out, where does this lead at SummerSlam? Is it Sheamus, Corbin? Pick the guy to boo, you'll probably cheer Sheamus. Or do they throw Riddle into the mix and have kind of some ambiguity over where all these guys stand? And then, you know, do you add a fourth guy if you can, and Jeff Hardy or Chad Gable or not?
I think you don't, and I think you make Jeff Hardy and Gable a separate match, because that'd be a solid match where Gable can show his heelishness and Hardy can be the face that's bouncing all over the place. And I think that would be a pretty good style as far as showing how the dark side's kind of corrupted Gable. And heck, I mean, even last week, I really liked that conversation they had where Corbin's coming from the perspective of, yeah, I still don't like you as much, but it all came from love. It was a place of affection. And he's such a slimy heel that you could kind of see it as something he would believe as he's telling you. So I really appreciated that.
I want to hear more from Lince Dorado, but I also want it to be when he's not, talking in WWE scripted tripe with, you know, the excess of puns and plays on words. But there's something there in his promo that if I watch that and I'm Vince McMahon or whoever, you know, the writers, and so I'm like, hey, there's something there, but let's let this guy talk in a way that's going to connect with the audience that we have such a terrible time attracting. But give this guy more mic time. I thought, again, the delivery and the charisma through the mask was great. The lines he gave, you know, nobody knows how to party like Lucha House Party, and I'm going to show you how to party. And it's like, come on, really? Did that jump out to you at all, Rich?
It did, especially because on Wednesday, I got to see Legado Fantasmo just completely kill it with their promo. So if you just give him that opportunity and just back up a little, I don't know who's writing that stuff for them, and let him be a little bit more authentic, I think he'll have some fun with that.
I do think something went really wrong here, though, because tag team challengers are supposed to be tag team champions in non-title singles matches. And the champions beat the challenger in a singles match. So that's sarcasm aside, that's bad news for Lince Dorado, because when you're not even good enough to score an upset as a challenger in a TV match, when that's all WWE does, I don't think we should hold out much hope for him.
Yeah, it seems like a one-off. Eventually the tag match, you know, mission accomplished, to get out of there. And that's sad, because I think there is room for those guys, especially with the Usos down, especially with the New Day down. You have an opportunity there to have a high energy face tag team that is filled with an ethnic demographic that you would like to maintain. And you're just kind of like with the Mustafa Ali situation, you're kind of poo-pooing it, and you have a gift horse right there.
Yeah. Yep. Anything else jump out from the show, Rich, you want to bring up?
No, I think that was it. The biggest one was me with the dichotomy between the relationship of Team Little Big and The Fiend, and we kind of exhausted that. And I really want to see what they do with this group, because the more – if they keep talking about it and they don't have a mission statement and they don't have a person that is the leader, invariably it's going to get portrayed as whiny kids that need to learn, oh, this is how the world works, pal. And I'm not looking forward to that should that be the story.
If somebody wants to sneak in here in our final minutes, 347-215-8558. And push one on your keypad. We can. I was going to go to. Go to another. We had somebody on hold, and he just hung up. So I guess we won't. So
oh,
anyway,
no.
Yeah. No. What can you do? I was giving out the number, and then he canceled. So if you're hearing us, you can call back him. But anyway, Rich, I kind of covered everything I think I wanted to cover here, other than Sasha and Bailey, and Sasha going, it was fine. I'm not mad about that, but it would have been nice if you ran it by me first. I thought that was one of the top five highlights on the show. I mean, the gall of Bailey to say that with a straight face to Sasha, and for Sasha to not to like hold back her reaction of, are you kidding me? For you to say that to me. So, you know, as we look for the seeds being planted of, you know, of a breakup, Sasha is passive aggressively paying Bailey back right now.
Yes. And that's the best type of frenemies or friendship you can have, is when they're so good at doing it and doing it in a passive aggressive way. I mean, I love, you know, one thing with this quarantine and, you know, working from home, I love watching Travis likes watching Bad Soaps. I love watching just anything that's on CW because it's just so they're WWE like, and they get to the point quick. And so, yeah, anytime you have that group of friends where it's like, oh, hey, yeah, your Beamer's nice. You know, it's a 2016. That's, you know, I have a 2020. Don't mean to brag, but it's a little newer. It's like, it's okay, just like your boyfriends. I date them first, and then you date them after me. and those little digs, I like it. I like it a lot. And because people have been clamoring to see them go up against each other, this super slow burn has been very fun for me, because with every delay of the actual match, we get another layer of petty.
Would you rather have them not cowering at Stephanie on the big screen, or does it enhance their characters for them to pander and say WWE Network $9.99 and as they're pandering, are we supposed to also believe they might be mocking her a little bit, or are they just pandering and cowering?
I think they're just pandering and cowering. The $9.99 part did get me, though, and in my head for the rest of it, it's them being sarcastic. But I know the reality is, as I saw on Twitter, where, you know, Bailey said whatever it was, she's like, I got a problem with you, Stephanie, and he's like, oh, you have a problem with that? Yeah, my problem is I can't thank you enough for everything you've done for women, which is ultimately just, I appreciate you, and my problem is I don't spend enough time with you. And so that sort of thing, because again, I go back to the two-man power trip, Steve Austin and Triple H, weren't doing that with Vince.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So,
no, granted,
if you want
their characters
women,
are very different than Sasha and Bailey, but point still there and to be taken. Jorge emailed and just said, what about Tessa Blanchard being introduced in the Battle Royal? And maybe she's explained as an NXT signee, which would explain why NXT's part of it, or they just need NXT to be part of it to have a Battle Royal to fill out enough names. But would that be a way to introduce Tessa and shoot her to the top?
Absolutely. And I think if Tessa came in with all the talk of the horse women, you have a horse. I mean, I don't know how they would want to do that since Tully is technically on AEW, but you know, you could still do it. You have Rick there. And I mean, that would be, oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking myself into it, because if you have Ric Flair as the manager for Tessa Blanchard, that is the type of thing Vince McMahon would like to do. And then when Charlotte gets back, she can play the, hey, I'm your daughter, why are you managing her? And off you go.
Yep. So anyway, glad, glad Jorge threw that at us here at the end here as a follow-up to the question about the Battle Royal. Rich, always a pleasure. Again, give people a reminder of how they can hear more from you on a weekly basis and also hear from you regularly throughout the days on social media.
Yeah, sure. So social media is easy at Rich_Fan, F-A-N-N. Here at The Torch, you can find me at the East Coast Cast Wednesdays VIP with Travis Bryant, my host. That is not minivan friendly. That is not living room friendly. It's probably like headphones, earbuds, whatever you use, because viewer discretion is definitely advised there. That's every Wednesday. And then on Saturdays, as part of PW Torch Daily Cast lineup of shows, I have the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. Typically, it's an hour where I dive in with a co-host on a subject of our choice. It could be as irrelevant or not irrelevant, irreverent as something like in a few weeks I'm doing with Kylan Furlow.
Words count.
Famous
words, count. Part,
words do count. That's why I want to make sure it's not irrelevant. It's definitely irreverent. Yeah. Irreverent. We're going to do something, part two of wrestler guest star spots on television shows. But then if you look a couple of weeks in our discography, so to speak, or our feed, I did a 4-hour interview with Will Cooling with Andy Quilden, who's the owner, promoter, and one of the few most powerful black people in wrestling, regardless of continent they're on, about the speaking out movement, what he's doing as a promoter to make sure. And in those 4 hours, he gave on the record concrete statements of fact as to what his company is going to do, not do, and people can hear that. And I really am proud of that episode because Will and I asked him questions. While it was admittedly two men, it was an opportunity to put that man in a position to say who he is, what he's about, and not every promoter was willing to do that. And so I appreciate that. So you could always listen to that on the PW Torch Daily Cast side of things, and obviously go VIP so you can get that ad-free and hear all the fun things we do weekly for you.
Excellent. Rich, thank you so much. Great to have you back on, and we'll talk to you in not too long.
Pleasure.